Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was three, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to GEICO and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
Who disrupts my car insurance?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak! I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame fest party!
What's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, and I'm back, motherfuckers! I'm Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not alone as I trek down this path of weirdness that I've been absent from for the last month or so. I'm joined with the man in the chair and Kitchener himself.
Alex.
That's right. I'm excited, because today, if you don't know, folks, it's time to celebrate your consoles, your Ataris, your Nintendos, your Sega Genesis, maybe a Dreamcast, because the Dreamcast turns 20 this year. Happy National Video Game Day.
Indeed.
It's one of those things that obviously we're very big gamers here at Twig, and we actually do have a video game review in this week's show. We're going to be talking about Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled on the PlayStation 4 from Activision a little later on in the show. But as we often do, we tend to start things off basically what we've been up to, where I've been, what's kind of been going on. So for the last month or so, I've had to take a little bit of personal time away from the show to deal with something kind of heavy. Can't go into details about it specifically. Once everything is all dealt with, I assure you, I'll tell you all what's happening. I'm in a little bit of hot water, but don't worry about it, folks. I always find my way out of trouble. It's what I often do. But rest assured, the Birdman shall fly again. But I want to talk about video games, because today is National Video Game Day, as I said. I'm actually going to be talking about that today, later on today, on a radio station in Winnipeg, CJOB, out there in Manitoba. And I'll be talking about video games' influence on pop culture, how some of these games make more than movies, like the Call of Duty franchise is a juggernaut. But we also have smaller indie titles that have broken out and made tremendous amounts of money. I mean, hell, remember when Minecraft was just a little thing, and now it's a multi-million, billion-dollar game franchise in and of itself?
Minecraft, Terraria, Hollow Knight, certain ones that just sort of really hit the mainstream out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who would have expected these little indie games to do such huge business, and for some of these characters to show up in pop culture? I mean, I know Shovel Knight, for example, has his own amiibo. Who the hell would have seen that coming?
Yeah, like a truly indie studio with like what, one or two people that make everything, and then they're now in like official, like they're in Smash Brothers and everything else. It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's crazy to think how big the video game industry has come, considering we only had the Crash just a little under 40 years ago, back in the early 1980s. I think it was the video game crash of 1983, I think, when everything basically went to hell.
Well, and then we had sort of the saturation effect, where during like the beginning of the PS3 era, everything looked the same. Every game had the exact same look. Every game had the same color scheme. And then we had this like towards the tail end of that generation and going into this generation, this like renaissance of color and imagination closer to what it was like in the early 80s.
Yeah, I mean, there is no limit to what you can create. And now with technology moving forward, you may not be limited by having gaming hardware in your house with stuff like Google Stadia that comes out later on this year. All you need is a controller and an internet connection. So there's the possibility for gaming to be open to an even wider audience and game on any screen. The fact that I could play Assassin's Creed Odyssey on my iPad, if I can open it up in a Chrome browser, that's kind of kick-ass. I mean, as long as your internet's fast enough to handle it, this opens up so many doors, and I'm excited to see what's happening with it.
It's also going to force people to, like, not people, but ISPs to upgrade their services. You know, the only reason that high speed is pretty much everywhere in the States now, like even like 15 meg, like minimum 15 megabit service, even in the country, is because of Netflix. They pushed it. They basically forced the industry to lay new lines down and actually get higher speed access. Well, this is going to do the same thing. Like Netflix came in about 10 years ago and forced dial-up to basically go away. And now things like Stadia and other cloud-based services are going to force them to go, okay, well, now we need to have a minimum of 50 meg service. Which, I mean, most cities, like any real city of like 100,000 people or more, has a minimum of 150 or 250 megabit service available. It's only the smaller towns and rural areas that don't or haven't upgraded. Well, this will kind of force them. If everybody wants it, then they kind of have to include it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I worry about it because the U.S. having a lot of places in the U.S. still have data caps, and the ISPs are notoriously slow to upgrade stuff because they have a virtual monopoly. I'm a little concerned, but Google being the industry leader that they are, if anybody can force someone's hand, it's them.
I was going to say, it's either going to be them or somebody else. All it takes is one billionaire or one huge company to go, you know what, screw these guys. Let's release a service. We'll sell it at a loss to begin with, but we're going to say we have no data caps and we're available anywhere with a minimum of 35 meg service. Mm-hmm. And you will get everybody converting over, and then everybody else has to offer it without data caps. It just takes one person to do it first.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see as we open gaming up to new sorts of people, as we move into the era of cloud gaming, which we are seeing more and more now, and we're seeing more digital subscription services open up, which I'm not a huge fan of, because do you own your library? But that's a discussion for a different day.
Yeah.
Hell, that's a future prototype topic right there.
Absolutely.
Digital ownership. But
Completely cloud gaming and cloud services, it's probably in the 5 to 10 year range away still, though. So nobody, don't panic right now. Like, the infrastructure has to be there and people have to be accepting of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how it's going to go. I don't think Google Stadia's launch is going to go as grandly as they think it will, but yeah, give it one or two years, we'll see.
I think it's going to be better than the doomsayers say, but I don't think it's going to be the thing that destroys the industry.
No, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to maybe sign up for the service when it initially comes out for the $10 a month. I figure, why not? I spend that much on comic books anyway.
I've already pre-ordered the Founders Edition, so I will see like right away whether or not, like, I'll know right away. And even the thing is, you don't have to have a subscription like permanently, so you might subscribe for a month and then go, I'm going to go get this new Ubisoft title that comes out, and then go, wait a minute, I don't want that for another 2 months. So then cancel and then only get it when the new title comes out, because then you only have to pay your $10 or $15 for the month that you want to play. And then you don't have to buy the game for like $70. So there's going to be people that do that, like only subscribe 3 or 4 months out of the year. They're going to have to do things to incentivize people to keep subscribed.
Mm-hmm. So to kind of swing things back to simpler times of gaming, in honor of National Video Game Day, I guess here's a question for our audience. You can answer this either feedback at thisweekingeek.net or at our Twitter at thisweekingeek. What's the first game you remember playing, or what's the first game you ever beat? The first game I clearly remember beating on my own with no help was The Legend of Zelda Part 1. I remember beating this back. It must have been 1988 or 89. I borrowed the game from my speech therapy teacher. I loaned her Mario 2. So it was kind of weird. My teacher would trade me games. Like, we go to speech therapy, and she would have her son. Like, okay, guys, we're going to trade. So we're just, you get this game for a week, and then you got to trade back. But I remember playing through Zelda 1. I didn't have a subscription to Nintendo Power at this time. And I just remember being able to beat it by reading through the instruction manual. This was one of the kids who was smart enough to keep his instruction booklet. And figuring out certain clues and stuff like that. Finding the hidden stuff in the graveyard. And then I remember finding out there was the Master Quest where you just had to put your name in a Zelda and you got the remixed map. Or for an all new adventure. But I still remember beating that game as a child and being remarkably proud of myself. My grandparents, who are the ones that raised me, not having any conception of what I was doing, were wondering what all the quote-unquote goddamn noise was about. But it's a memory that I treasure. When I kicked the shit out of Ganon, got the Triforce, and I was like, yeah, I beat it! And little piece of trivia about little Mr. Mikey here. One of my favorite video game sounds of all time is the sound of the Zelda sword shooting. And that's because of the Super Mario and Zelda Adventure Hour, part of the Super Mario Super Show where they had the Zelda cartoon. The sound of the sword is one of my favorite sounds of all time. What about you, Alex?
For me, the first games I think I remember playing would have been like Mario 1, 2 sort of thing. Because we got our Nintendo in, I was turning 5, so it was late 91. So we're talking like near the end of its life. We got it from like a flea market or something. And it had Mario, Duck Hunt, that sort of thing. As far as beating, I know we had a Game Genie, so I know I beat some games that way. But as far as beating a game completely on my own or with a friend, it's probably Dragon Warrior 1, which I didn't even know what an RPG was. Because I was like 5, and I had a friend who was 6. And we were able to read enough, because we were actually pretty advanced, I guess, like reading at home and stuff. So we were able to get through that game in a weekend. But we got stuck, like, at the end of the game, when you're going through the final dungeon. Well, I guess there's only like 3 dungeons in the game, but you're going through the final castle. There's some infinite loops. Like, if you go down certain stairways, it just keeps looping forever. We're like, wow, this is taking forever. And we went for like an hour and a half of going down the same stairs, not realizing that
it was looping.
that we were going in the wrong spot. We were supposed to go somewhere else because, again, didn't have any guides. We were like 5, 6, 7 years old. So we ended up figuring it out. But and it's funny because it would be so archaic now that a lot of people wouldn't want to deal with it as an RPG, but it was also a game that you could beat in theoretically 10 to 12 hours of play. You know, unlike a Final Fantasy or a modern Dragon Quest, which is like, you know, 100 hours. But it was like, for us, the reading, even though it was in Old English, because they purposely did that, we could read enough to get by, and we were like mesmerized by the idea of, it's like, oh my God, like, we're in control of this, and we can stay in towns and buy different weapons, and there's different dungeons, and there's bad guys, and you can run from them. Like, it was like the concept of an RPG was, you know, so new to us, and it was still fairly new to most people. But that was the first one we were able to beat because it was the only game that we had where we could save, right? Like, we didn't have Zelda, we didn't have a lot of other ones, so everything had to either be beat in one session or you had to use like a Game Genie if it was too difficult. But this was one where we could save and come back to it, you know, another time, which I think that was really what revolutionized the entire, you know, adventure RPG genre, was just the ability of not having to enter like 10 million passwords.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as that was with a friend beating something on my own for the very first time was probably, I think I beat Mario 1 like one time unassisted and nobody was there to see me do it. It was one of those things. And then like later on, I don't count, like, you don't really beat hockey games because I used to play Blades of Steel a lot, and that you know, it's not really beating, but as far as a game that has a beginning, middle, end with like a closing sequence, I did beat Zelda. Like you said, I beat it on my own, but I did use a guide. Like, I used a map that somebody had luckily drawn for me. They're like, here's where you go to this dungeon. Here's where you go to this dungeon. And everything else I had to do on my own. But again, remember, me being a little younger, I'm like 5 years old playing this in the early 90s.
Wow. It's kind of amazing how far we've come, because now we beat games on the regular, either be it for review or fun.
Remember, there wasn't easy mode back then.
No.
And also, I think in general, what we have now as a hard mode was the regular mode back then for most games.
Well, yeah, because most games, when they were brought over from Japan or whatnot, they'd have to retool them for a Western audience, or if they went over from the Western to Japanese audiences, they'd have to be changed up a little bit in terms of difficulty. Now, here's a question for you, and then we'll get to the rest of the show. What's the game you've beaten most recently? The game I've beaten most recently is the one that sticks out in my mind the most, would be Persona 5. 120 hours. Holy shit, what an experience that was. And that's, to me, probably one of the best RPGs I've ever played in my life.
And I'm glad that I badgered you to play it.
Well, yeah, I figured, you know what, for $20 it was on sale. It was like a PlayStation flash sale in like May. And I figured, well, I got some money kicking around in my pocket. Hey, I could buy Dancing in Starlight today, I just realized.
It's also, yeah, because it's like 50% off.
Hmm.
But I was going to say,
Michael treat himself. Anyway, go on.
What's funny is I badgered you for that, and I still haven't beat it myself because I was literally so enthralled with it. I was like, I don't want to beat it now. So I forgot about it for almost a year, and now I have to go back and beat it. But like, I played Persona 4 like crazy. But yeah, as far as like most recent game that I've beaten, I've got a few because I've had a bunch of reviews coming up. But the most recent one does that Peach Ball game count?
Holy shit. Can we talk about that now or not until tomorrow?
Not until tomorrow. My review's coming out on
next
Wednesday.
Week.
It's on Wednesday with that Carter Treasure. I've already got it scheduled, people. I can say that it was interesting. But as far as reviews, like of a longer, more in-depth game, would be Judgment from Sega.
That looked pretty kick-ass, actually.
You'll get a kick out of it. It's Yakuza with a bit of that Fist of the North Star style that I liked from last year, with a bit of there's like on rails parts where you're running down streets and doing timed actions. There's parts where you're fighting in like a fighting force sort of style where you're brawling. Then there's parts where you're investigating things like Phoenix Wright. And then there's parts where it's just ridiculous Yakuza craziness. So those games, and they're pretty long too. You can get 40 hours or more out of them. But I want to raise a question to you. Two questions. What is the game that you've beaten the most, like over repetitively? I think I already know what it is. And what is the game that, like, what's the most amount of time you think total you've put into a singular game?
Game I've beaten the most would be the Mass Effect trilogy with, I think I've got 15 total playthroughs all three games.
Across all of them, so not like 15 of all three.
No, 15 of all three.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When I start a playthrough, it starts at Mass Effect 1 and it don't end till the fucking lasers at the end of Mass Effect 3.
You would love it if they came out with a remastered version for the new generation, eh?
It better goddamn happen. The game I've put the most time into would either be a tie between Rock Band 3 or Rock Band 2 or Skyrim. I've easily put 1,000 hours.
Yeah, for me, as far as repeating over and over again, I was going to originally say like Mass Effect 2 or Dragon Age or something. But no, I would probably say Final Fantasy 2 or 4, depending on which version you're playing, on the Super Nintendo. Since I was like 9 or 10 years old playing with friends, I've probably played that game in some form or another from beginning to end 20, 25 times or more. And mm-hmm. There's other Final Fantasies where I've done that with, but probably 4, like, because that was the one I owned. And just trying it different, beating it different ways, trying the different versions on the, like, whatever virtual console or whatever exists. As far as the most time on a singular game, that would be Dragon Age Origins. I put 125 hours into my one character, 100 hours into another playthrough, 80 hours into another playthrough, and then I played I play at least 3 hours on every other character type and background to get all the stories. to platinum it. So like we're talking 400 hours or so.
Wow, that's a lot of goddamn playtime.
I mean, it doesn't beat your Skyrim, but the interesting thing is my playthroughs, that 400 hours is different playthrough, like it's different gameplay style. Do you play the same way every time you play Skyrim, or do you play completely different?
I try and I look for different things. I'll start the same way every time. Like I'll max out my smithing. I'll do. It's not a hack, but it's an exploit to gain arrows that do like 2 billion damage. It's ridiculous.
We're not MMO guys, because if we were MMO guys, we could have been like, oh, we have like 10,000 hours in a WoW or something stupid. But because we're not that, like, as far as a single player or a multiplayer game that you've put the most in, like, even COD would count, but I don't think either of us have played enough to
Advanced on. Warfare, I put a lot of hours in, because I used to play that game for, like, 5-6 hours every day at its height.
So you think that might be approaching your Skyrim 1,000 hours?
I'd wonder, just because I used to play a lot online. I never played ranked, but I used to play a lot of social in that game, and I'd finish typically in the top 5. I had a few top finishes in those games, but after the advanced movement of Black Ops 3, I kind of fell out of the series. I didn't like Call of Duty World War II, and I didn't play Infinite Warfare like at all. It's still installed on my hard drive. I just haven't played it yet. So I would kind of wonder. I also spent a fair chunk of time in the Grand Theft Auto 5 as well.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, it's sort of a look into the microcosm of what we play. You, it's like fantasy RPG and tons of shooty stuff.
Yeah, pretty much.
With me, it's like anything RPG or weird quirky.
So, there we go, guys. We've celebrated National Video Game Day by giving us a little bit of insight. Again, we do want to hear from you at This Week in Geek on Twitter, or this or feedback at thisweekingeek.net. to receive your contributions. So anyway, coming up on the show this week, we say goodbye to a satirical icon. We also talk about a cyber attack in a very unusual place. The finale of The Walking Dead has finally happened in the comic books. And has Avengers finally caught up to those blue bastards? We'll have to find out. And of course, the weird news from around the world this week involving there can be only one armed guards and ice cream. And a guy who likes to clog toilets. We'll be back right here on This Week in Geek. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd. But before we go anywhere, this is my review of Crash Team Racing from Activision. Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled by Activision. We'll be back, guys, right after this. Only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Activision presents A Smashing Blast from the Past. Fasten your seatbelts for a Beanox recreation!
Whoa! Hey guys, Mike the Birdman Don here with another review for you. And today I'm taking a look at Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled on the PlayStation 4. A review code was provided to us. Well, this has always been considered to be the alternative to popular kart racers such as Mario Kart, and this was meant for the PlayStation crowd way back in the day. So this is sort of a reimagining and retooling of the original game with some older stuff thrown in and retooled, and sort of an update, if you will. And I never had a chance to play the original back on the original PlayStation, so a lot of this is very, very new to me, coming into it as a fairly noob Crash Team player. And I gotta say, what I got here, I'm very impressed. I kind of expected this to be just another kart racer, sort of like, hey, here's wacky characters and you can win no matter what. No, I actually got a surprisingly different experience. I was expecting something very similar to Mario Kart, and on the surface you could argue that, but what you get here is something very heavily skill-based, I found out during my time with this game. I actually got stuck at a few places just because the game is deceptively difficult at times on some of the courses and some of the boss battles you'll encounter in this game, because you have to master mechanics like power sliding and turbo boosting. If you want to finish in first place, you better know what the hell you're doing. You better know some of these tracks. and it heavily relies on skills, as items will not save you in this game. There is no equivalent to the blue shell, though I would argue the Aku Aku shield is one of the items you can pick up, which gives you temporary invincibility and you can knock people aside. That definitely helps, but other items, it's going to be skill-based on how and when you use them, and that will determine basically how quickly you're able to catch up. But for the most part, I was very surprised how much of this game depended on my ability as a player. That being said, there is a lot of content in this game. There's a lot of unlockable characters. I played primarily as Coco Bandicoot because I always play the girls because typically they have much faster acceleration and I like to go fast. But there's Crash, Doctor, Cortex, Dr. Engine, and there's like an adventure mode too, where you're fighting against Nitrous Oxide, some alien dude who wants to take over the planet. It's not important. You just want to kick his ass as best you can. But yeah, you can unlock different carts, different wheels, decals, and customization for your characters. There's so much to unlock here. This is a game that's going to keep you busy for quite some time. But if you want something that's a little bit more in-depth than Mario Kart and you're sick of the same Nintendo mascot-y stuff, then I actually really do have to recommend playing Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled, because there's a lot of content. There is an online mode, and there also is local players as well for, I think, support up to 4 players. And if you're willing to put the work in, this game is really rewarding, especially because, like I said, it's skill-based. Items will not guarantee you a win, and even items that are super useful don't come up as often as you'd like, and that means you're going to have to rely on you and your abilities to win. And I really do like that, the fact that I can't just blue shell my way to victory. No, you're going to have to work for it. So power slide and turbo boost your way into Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled on the PlayStation 4. It definitely gets a recommend from us here at This Week in Geek. Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping, and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the march!
And welcome back to This Week in Geek. As always, I'm Mike the Birdman Daw, joined with Alex the producer. Let's talk about the news that happened in and around the world. This week we call Planet Earth the Big Blue Marble. I like to call it home sometimes when it's not being frigging stupid. However, we have some sad news to report. If you are a fan of satire, and I know I am, you all remember Mad Magazine with Alfred E. Newman with the catchphrase, "Me worry?" However, after 67 years, Mad Magazine is reportedly shutting down. Longtime Mad contributor Evan Dorkin bid the publication goodbye this past week by saying, "Today won't end. Goodbye, Mad Magazine. As a youngster, I was a huge fan of the 70s era. As a young adult, I rediscovered the 50s comics. As an old nerd, I somehow became a contributor, often working with Sarah Dreyer for the last decade. Getting the email today was crushing. Grateful to Dan Telfer for our gig during the LA era. Grateful to everyone for so many opportunities at NYC. It was a dream, a blast, and a decent paycheck. Mad still sells more copies than most comics, but obviously that isn't enough with overhead and quarterly bean counting. I don't feel bad for myself. We were discussing new work, but nothing set or soon. We had a good run seeing Mad closed down hurts, especially during a morbidly depressing year for cartoonists and the comics industry in general. My heart goes out to the usual gang of freelancers." 67 years.
This is how it ends. To be honest, I thought it was canceled years and years ago. It was never really funny, or at least it hasn't been in 30 years or more.
I wouldn't go that far. I used to like reading Mad and Cracked a lot.
No, the TV show was probably the only important thing they've had in the last 30 years. It was just sort of like you'd snicker and go, "Heh." You'd be like, "I'm not paying for that. I wouldn't pay money for the jokes that are there when I can get them for free on The Onion."
See, I used to read a lot of these during my kind of growing up period, especially during high school. I'd almost always, you'll laugh at this, three items you could always find in my backpack.
Can I guess?
Yeah. What three items?
Well, obviously, okay, a magazine, let's say, let's get Matt out of the way. See, yeah. if it's similar to my backpack, there would be some form of popper snacks and also the Weekly World News.
Yeah, I used to carry the Weekly World News, copy of Mad or Cracked, and usually a Jolt Cola. 9 times out of 10, you could find this in my backpack. My girlfriend at the time would probably back me up on this.
And mine was similar, except instead of the magazine, I had either like a rock magazine, like Revolver, or I would have like a game magazine.
Like, I don't know. Just I'm surprised it took this long for it to go under.
I just thought they had gone digital completely years ago. That's what I mean. I didn't mean gone as in like non-existent, because I knew they existed, but I had thought that they had exited print like 5-6 years ago or more.
Yeah, it's certainly one that I didn't quite expect to like read. Like I said, 67 years, this is how it ends, and it was via email. Like, by the way, you're done. No farewell party, but I guess not everybody gets... I don't know.
They also moved offices. It sounds like something screwy would happen with management, because had they still been in their original office, they would have done a party.
Yeah.
But the talk was when they moved, they didn't take like 90% of their staff. So that should have been writing on the wall right there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much you can accomplish with freelancers, but you want your established bullpen of writers to go with you.
Yeah.
It's typically you should be able to do that from anywhere anyhow.
A lot of important people came from there, or people that became famous, which is cool. But really, can you name one article in the last 20 years?
I don't know whether it was a Cracked or a Mad article. From the last 20 years, no. From 23 years, yes.
See, and that's the thing. Really, have they been relevant in 20 years?
I think it depends on who you ask, because satire and funny magazines like that appeal to a certain demographic. Well, you have to know of it, and a millennial now is not aware of it, because how often do you hear people around your age, for example, because you're, what, 5-6 years younger than me?
Yeah, I'm 32.
Yeah, you don't go to the newsstand too often, where myself, I'll still occasionally pick up magazines at the newsstand.
Oh, I'll pick up, like, pro wrestling mag. I'll pick up magazines, and that, which is different than people even 5 years younger than me. What I mean is, what purpose did Mad serve now that memes exist?
I think it was more satiring the culture, but now that memes exist, now that we can get that immediacy on Twitter or on YouTube.
The Onion, Beaverton, like there's websites that are completely free that are as funny, if not funny, are doing the exact same thing. The only thing you were getting with Mad were the classic satire cartoon designs.
Mm-hmm.
And those people will get work other places too. Like when the show ended, it really, like the TV show, it pretty much signaled the end of them, because the show was created because of the popularity of the magazine. And when the show ended, it meant, well, in my mind, the magazine must not be popular anymore.
See, I always assumed the show was created for something for Fox to rival Saturday Night Live to fill that hour of programming on a Saturday night.
But they had done like Friday. Like, there were other skit shows they had tried. And they went with this because of the brand, right?
Well, like, yeah, because during the time they had In Living Color, House of Buggin' was a short-lived John
Fridays.
Leguizamo vehicle.
There was a bunch of other stuff.
But
you had the Kids in the Hall, and you had a lot of stuff around the exact same time. And Mad was basically, it had branding that people had known about. And it was basically the baby boomers were super fans of it in the 60s and 70s. And that's what kept it going. The problem was they really didn't update with the time. So it's sad to see them go, but I do think it's going to live on in some format. They already said, reading the article, they are still going to, like, they're going to be basically collections of previous articles, and they're going to do one new issue a year. So it's not completely gone. They're going to do their year end, and they're still paying people to do the year end. It's just ceased production as a monthly magazine, which kind of makes sense, because was there really enough to sustain that? But I think people will go around Christmas time and, you know, buy as a gift for somebody a $10-$12 magazine that has like a whole bunch of new stuff that's for the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than paying $5, like, I don't even know what it costs. It was probably up to $10 or more now. Which
I don't think it was much more than $5 or $6, but I cannot Cannot confirm that.
And I didn't know that DC owned them.
Yeah, that was something new to me. But DC's been changing around its publishing arm because they shut down the Vertigo imprint, which is where you went for weird books and everything, but it's relaunching under something new. Because like Sandman and Swamp Thing are still going to
continue. I guarantee you the brand won't die as far as the, you know, the look and the art style. They'll find a way to make it work. It's just not going to work in the way that was traditionally run, because really outside of like a lot of like homemaker magazines, what else really exists today other than gossip mags?
Mm-hmm. So moving on to our next story. This one is kind of fucked up and scary. Health Canada is warning diabetics that some insulin pumps are at risk for cyber attacks. Health Canada is warning diabetics and healthcare providers that some insulin pumps could be susceptible to cyber attacks. The health agency released a statement last Saturday saying the affected models distributed between 2010 and 2015 are at risk. I'm just going to find more info while you look that up.
I am reasonably sure that this was a plot line of an episode of NCIS just before the season ended.
This was a plot line of a Law and Order episode 1994.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I watched an episode a few weeks ago after right when it was airing, that this is somebody had taken people hostage and were using, I'm pretty sure it was either NCIS or something like that. But yeah, and I thought, oh, it's a hokey premise. And it's oh no, it could really happen.
So the agency said cyber attacks could affect the device's settings, which could result in an incorrect dose of insulin, but the agency is not aware of such incidents occurring. According to Health Canada, the device manufacturer, Medtronic, says settings can be changed if the cyber attacker knows the serial number of the pump and can connect wirelessly, or if they have radio frequency equipment. So what happened in the Law and Order episode that I saw is some kid hacked into the hospital records and was changing insulin pump numbers so people were receiving incorrect doses. And an insulin overdose can kill you just as quickly as not having enough.
Oh, yeah.
More quickly.
That's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, there was another episode of, I think, CSI, where there was a guy at a party. It was like a foam party or something. And he hit someone with a high dose of short-acting insulin, and they dropped dead almost immediately.
What happens is the sugar goes to your brain and basically cooks it.
Yeah.
And you die. like there's too much sugar on the brain will literally eat away at your brain.
Yeah, so that's kind of fucking scary. I'm a diabetic. I don't have a pump. I've considered getting a pump at times. Well, but after this, fuck that.
My brother is a type 1, so he takes needles all the time too. And he looked at it, and they actually told him, they said, actually, you're more accurate when he takes it himself than what the pump can do. So if you're good with it and you get good with it, you may as well just do it yourself. And yes, you got to stick needles in yourself, but you're then in control of the exact amount you get.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off? All right. What is this? This looks good. Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Plus, you aren't at risk of pulling the pump out. It is inconvenient to wear.
Yeah, and it will never be quite as accurate as doing it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least not for another 5-10 years or whatever, till they get to the point where there's talk of people making patches where you wear a patch, like people that try to quit smoking, but you'll put the patch on and it delivers the right amount of insulin for a full week.
Mm-hmm. So that's some scary news. However, moving on to my next story, which is a little less scary and fucked up, although surprising. very, very, very surprising, is The Walking Dead has been going on for, I think, 15 years. Robert Kirkman has made an epic amount of television series. There's forthcoming movies. There's action figures. All sorts of media.
Do you know who he looks like? Sorry, just to interrupt. He looks a lot like what's his name? Oh, why am I drawing a blank on it now? Roebuck. He looks like fatter
an older
Roebuck.
Roebuck. There we go. thank you for that side distraction. Yes, anyway, indeed. So the series has ended with issue 193.
They didn't go all the way to 200? That's weird.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, actually. But Robert Kirkman says, this was my decision. This is how I wanted to end it. And I went out on my terms. So 15 years of The Walking Dead is over. And I gotta say, the conclusion is not what I thought it was. Spoilers, minor spoilers.
Because I'm not gonna watch the show anymore anyway. So.
Well, the show has diverged so much from the book.
And it's gone to crap in the last 3 or 4 years anyway.
Yeah. In issue 192, Rick dies. They kill Rick.
Ooh, big deal. Wasn't everybody just expecting that anyway?
Well, yes and no. In 193... the story picks up, I think, about 15 or 20 years later. Civilization has largely been restored. The dead are no longer a real problem. No one has seen a walker in 10 years.
Did people say what it was? Was it just a disease, or was it...
They never explain it. But Herschel Green, who's the son of Maggie and Glenn, runs a traveling sideshow that has walkers in it, and they're like, ooh, come see The Walking Dead, pay $10. And that's determined to be a crime. So somehow Michonne is still alive. She's like the judge, some high judge determines it to be punishable. You can't have zombies anymore. They kill them. Carl is still alive, and Carl tells his family about his dad, how his dad helped build this world. And it ends on a rather happy note. It seems like there is hope for the future. They call the time with the walkers known as the trials. And
I'm assuming it was a disease and then everybody got immune to it with antibodies or something.
I don't know. And I kind of like how they never explain that. It's not a virus. It's not God.
Well, pretty
it's
much
not
like,
aliens.
99% of everybody that could have found out with their knowledge and science is dead. So you sort of have to. It's going to take a long time for people to even get smart enough and read enough books to get to the point where they can understand what was going on in the first place.
Well, yeah, because the world has changed so much. It's essentially a do-over of society,
and everything's gone back to the way it was 250 years ago.
Yeah, that's another thing that gets described in the book. It's very much like the Wild West. In fact, one of the characters, Eugene, is, I think, working to build a railroad between the East and the West.
Yeah, so it's gone back to like 1850s, only some places have electricity.
Yeah, so it's kind of neat just to see that the book is finally done. Maybe I'll read the series now that's fully collected.
Yeah, they'll probably put out some pretty neat, you know, collector's volumes of it too.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be, I mean, honestly, it's one of the most important comic books of the last 15-20 years.
It's probably the most important, at least independent wise it's the most important. Yes. Comic book since Spawn.
Yeah, the fact that it turned into this media juggernaut.
Well, like, since Spawn, I don't think we've had, other than this book, anything that sold 1 million copies, like, at all. Because even like Batman only isn't selling in, like, they're lucky if they get 100,000 in circulation.
Yeah, because comic sales are down across the board, yeah. Digital and all that.
And, like,
it's...
I think Walking Dead 1 is like at the 2 million mark. It's at an insane amount, considering it's like at early 90s before the bubble burst amount.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I didn't expect a happy ending, but I'm okay with it. I guess I'm glad the book came away from all the doom and gloom from the television show. The television show, as you said, hasn't been good for a couple of years. The refresh this year,
right before Negan showed up,
I gave up about a season after Negan showed up, and I've watched the big shocker of this season where they show Alpha and her line of death, where they decapitate like 10 people, and you see Enid and Tara and a bunch of other people from the following communities. Their heads are on spikes, like, and they're alive.
I had my zombie show, and it was a lot better, and it was called Game of Thrones. So,
yeah, but we could talk about the flaws in that one too. If we but really I'm saying, like,
if I want zombies, why don't I get the one that has the best writing and best everything?
I don't know. Walking Dead was pretty solid for its first few years.
I think it was around season 5 is when it fell apart. What are they on? Season 9?
10, I think now.
Oh,
10.
God.
10, okay. Yeah. 10 or 11. I'm not sure.
The Big Bang Theory of zombie shows.
It's just the fact that the storyline doesn't move very much in the characters outside of Daryl and, let's say, even Michonne's gone this year.
No, if you're going to watch a good show, like, watch The Strain, the one about vampires using parasites. That was Del Toro and Kirkman, I think, made that.
Yeah.
And that show ran, I think, 3 or 4 years, something like that. And it's very quick, concise, and you get everything done. They have the whole story. Bam. Happy. Like, and this show, just it, when they started getting that 20 million viewers, it's like, oh, God, we got to stretch it out and spread it over. Like, this season is now split into 2 parts, 6 months apart. Like, fuck you.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan how television does the split seasons now. I mean, I get they do it so they can give them a break during the winter, but to bring it back in February and end your season at the end of November, that's just a pain in the ass. Yeah. But it is what it is. So moving on to our last news story this week, Avengers Endgame, which was recently re-released in theaters with new footage, is only $16 million away from Avatar at the box office.
There'll be some creative thing. It was only supposed to be in theaters this, like, on the 4th of July weekend. Mm-hmm. There's talk that they're going to keep it in theaters another weekend.
Now, according to this, the film hasn't surpassed Avatar yet, but it's within $16 million. So Avengers Endgame's box office total is now $2.772.5 billion, which is $15.5 million short of Avatar's $2.788 billion record. However, there's still a lot of theaters that I know that are still showing this.
Well, and also what they're not taking into account is
Avatar was re-released a bunch of times too.
Yeah. It's also apples and oranges. Like, we're now 10 years apart. Inflation has gone up. So that means that whatever they made then, that's only in like
2009 dollars.
You can't compare that. It's not the same thing. It's probably closer to 3 billion. So like, or like if you try to compare, it's like, oh, it's going to beat that and be the most grossing film of all time. It's like, no, it won't. Gone with the Wind made like $500 million in 1938 or 39. If you convert that to today's money, it's like $4 billion. So like, mm-hmm. Nothing will ever hit that. Not to mention, you got to take ticket prices into account. It's not the most viewed movie because Avatar, the average ticket price, including 3D, was $10 to $12. Now it's $16 for the same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, it was, you know, they made, if you convert the money, it made $4 billion or whatever for Gone with the Wind. Well, ticket prices were a nickel. So, you know, it made $400 million of nickels. So, like, you're never going to have that thing where, like, the entire country sees a movie 4 or 5 times. And we're talking every single person that saw it 4 or 5 times. So the number's arbitrary. It's all for something.
Optics.
How they can spin it. Because you're never going to beat, like, there is literally no film in history that will ever beat Gone with the Wind now because people don't consume media the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's cool to see that number, but...
Yeah, basically, it's just so Disney can talk to its shareholders and report towards the end of the year, we beat Avatar.
And let's be honest, it's already more popular than Avatar. It was a better written movie, better acted movie, better received movie, more talked about movie. Avatar was talked about for the technology, not because it was a good movie. This is by far the highest grossing and highest in the consciousness of the public's eye movie in the last 30 years, probably since like Star Wars.
Yeah, I would agree. Since maybe Star Wars Episode 1.
Yeah, as far as what everybody has at least seen it once sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So I do wish Anthony and Joe Russo all the best. I hope they get their achievement. $60 million, that's a couple of weekends. So, because this movie comes out on digital on July 30th, and I think in physical media on the 14th.
Yeah, so. it's probably going to enter its run on like the small screen theaters, like the aftermarket ones now, and that'll probably make up at least $1 or $2 million, and then they'll see whatever else they can figure out with the bean counters to make it look like they made more.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. So anyway, we are going to take a small break here on the show as we got a review or a pair of reviews in one place in this part of the show. So we'll be back right after this thing from Alex. We'll be back right here on This Week in Geek. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd with Alex, the producer. And we'll be back right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
I have a pair of releases from Wellgo USA, and they're a little different than what I would usually cover, but interesting. There is a movie called Swing Kids, which here's the basic description of it. In the swinging musical drama set during the Korean War, the soldiers at a POW camp plan a tap show to distract both themselves and the prisoners from the hardships of war. Led by former Broadway dancer and rebellious North Korean soldier, the band of prisoners find a new sense of freedom in dancing. I'm not usually into the musical sort of films, but I actually pretty much I enjoyed myself with this. It is in Korean with subtitles in English. It's obviously not fully dubbed in English because it would lose a lot of the meaning of the film because it is a musical dance number, you know, feature. And it's pretty well staged, well shot, you know, good music. It's not... It's different because I'm not used to seeing a musical in another language. So it's one to keep an eye out for. You know, this is just sort of a quick overview of it. If you're unsure, get a check it out on like YouTube and that and watch a trailer for it. And the second release that we've got here is Fury, which is an action film. And it's this one's Vietnamese. It's interesting. It says here, when a little girl is kidnapped by a trafficking ring, they soon find they messed with the wrong child. Her mother, a notorious former gang leader, is close on their trail and will go to any lengths to bring her daughter home. I have not seen a lot of Vietnamese movies. In fact, this might be the only Vietnamese movie I've ever seen. And the action is pretty good. There is an English dub as well on here, and it's pretty standard for, you know, dubbing an Asian action film in English. You're going to have a good time pretty much either one you watch. Like, if you watch it in English or watch it in the original Vietnamese, it's pretty well put together. You get a DVD as well as the Blu-ray in this, so you can pop it in any old player that you want. Both are pretty good, and they're retailing for $10 to $15, so that's something to check out. You know, the musical one I might actually give to my family to watch because they're more into that stuff than I am, and I don't think they've ever seen a musical in... you know, an Asian language before, so the Korean musical might be kind of interesting for them to check out. So, like I said, these are just quick overview reviews. They're both worth it if you're into the respective genres. I would say I wouldn't go out of my way personally to buy a musical, but I do think Fury is really good. But if you are into musicals, Swing Kids is going to be probably right up your alley.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
And welcome back to This Week in Geek. And we are here to talk about the weird, wacky, that just plain fucked up that happened around the planet this past week. And we take you to the weird and wonderful land of Sheboygan. And this one... Oh boy. So, a man named Patrick D. Beeman was sentenced Monday to 3 years of probation, including 150 days of jail time for a string of incidents where he clogged toilets. You might think, oh, this poor man and his overactive colon. No. So, a 26-year-old Sheboygan man was sentenced on Monday to 3 years of probation and 150 days in jail for clogging women's toilets in Dellen Park and his place of work. According to a criminal complaint, officers found a toilet in the women's bathroom at D-Lane Community Center clogged by a plastic bottle last March. Water was overflowing from the toilet. Officers reviewed 10 similar incidents beginning in April 2017 where toilets were clogged. According to the complaint, Beeman told police he gets the urge to do odd things like look for bottles in the garbage to plug toilets. He said he stopped when he heard police were investigating. What in the actual fuck?
The toilet bandit.
Well, like, literally, he just gets a voice in his head one day. Patrick, you know what would be fucking awesome? Grab that bottle of Evian and shove it in the toilet.
It sounds like it's more like, Patrick, you have to do this. Keep doing it. You got to do it. You got to do it because you got to do it. Do it, do it, do it. You got to do it. You got to do it. That's what it probably sounds like.
And this could only happen in Sheboygan.
Sheboygan.
That's a fun word.
It's like Delaware.
And honestly, you can't say the word Sheboygan without smiling. I don't know why. It's just, it's a magical, happy place where the toilets are always clogged. Thank you, Patrick, for your service.
Sheboygan, it's the sound your dong makes when you flex and it makes that bouncy sound. Sheboygan.
So I'm surprised he got 3 years of probation and 150 days in jail. Can you, like, what do you say to your cellmate?
I'm fully
waiting. What are you in for?
Toilet clogging. I'm just fully waiting for there to be a news report that he was, you know, he was hung in prison by somebody because he clogged the toilet in prison and it overflowed with poo in there. And that's one place you don't want to have that happen in.
Oh, God. Still, I guess he's going to serve his time. Go get him.
Yes.
So moving on to the next weird story that happened around the world this week. Me and Alex are both fans of the film Highlander, a story of immortals where there can be only one till they battle through the ages and they draw swords and they decapitate each other, but never battle on holy ground.
And we shall never speak of Highlander the Source, the final film, because that doesn't
exist. Highlander 2, The Quickening. Although, at least Sean Connery came back.
You can watch The Quickening for laughs. You can watch Endgame for the, I guess, ridiculous story. You can't watch the fifth one at all, because it's garbage. Yep. And the TV show is awesome, and Highlander 1 and 3 are pretty good.
So, this past week in New York, someone decided to channel their inner Connor McLeod, or Duncan McLeod, if you prefer. So, about a week ago, 2 weeks ago now, a sword fight breaks outside a Bronx apartment building. There's actually pictures of this. So, I'm going to read you the article because it is fairly short. It was a real-life rumble in the Bronx Sunday as two men faced off in a movie-style sword fight at the door of an apartment building, with one brandishing a foot-long blade and another one a heavy metal rod. This broad light daylight drama started around 11 a.m. I'm not going to give the address. In Highbridge, where a man with an iron bar and no shirt came knocking. Not clear why he was there, as there were no police reports made after the brief encounter. But the bar-wielding aggressor was greeted at the door by a rude surprise, a man gripping what looked like a small samurai-style sword. The shirtless man was not deterred, crouching into a defensive position as he waved his crude club. The sword-carrying man, meanwhile, used the door like a shield as both combatants swung at each other during the fight, which lasted about 15 minutes. So this was not a short brawl. It wasn't clear to witnesses what the fight was about, but the shirtless man scampered off after his arm was cut. Witnesses said, and I love this quote, he vowed to return. So indeed there can be only one.
I will return.
McLeod! Oh my God. Just the fact that this guy's wielding probably what is like a Tanto that he bought from some dirt flea market at the side of the highway, just off of the turnpike. Wow. Get off my lawn! There could be only one! Holy shit, man.
Yeah.
You Americans. But
yeah.
Speaking of this, I can follow this up with a Canadian angle on this. So recently, it is now legal to duel in Canada with swords.
Indeed.
So maybe I should start carrying around my katana on my wheelchair, just in case someone decides to be like, hey, I'm going to rob you. Oh, yeah, motherfucker, there could be only one.
Or they won't get out of the way when you're riding down the sidewalk and they think you have to go on the grass with your wheelchair.
I could start jousting them.
Just get their hammies. Just boop. Just one little slash.
Just cut cut the back of the hamstring. I got your Achilles heel, motherfucker. So, yeah, America, I love you. And it gets weirder, if you can believe, after this. So recently there was a viral video of a person walking into a Walmart, opening up an ice cream and licking it. Okay, that's a weird flex, but all right. Let's go with that. So after a viral video went, well, viral, a Texas Walmart stations armed guards outside the Bluebell ice cream case. Someone posted a photo of this, of the employee guarding the store's ice cream case, armed with a water pistol. In a now-deleted Facebook post, a photo taken at the Walmart on Saratoga Road in Corpus Christi showed a staff member named Ruben guarding the Bluebell ice cream display, his arms folded in a water gun with the tag still on his left hand. We're guarding our Bluebell ice cream for your weekend party. What a great way to cool down the hot Texas heat, claimed the caption. It's weird, because the girl who... that they eventually found out who the girl was, if what I'm reading is correct. And she could face a jail sentence for up to 2 to 20 years.
Maybe think about what you're doing, and don't be stupid just to get internet fame.
That's the thing, and I've seen a lot of similar people talking about that. I mean, obviously, it's a stupid prank. You should be punished for doing stupid things. But maybe jail time is a little excessive. But you do raise a very good point. People do a lot of dumb shit for internet fame. Like, do you remember a couple years ago where people climbed on top of a crane in downtown Toronto just to get a selfie? And I think that guy got like 2 years.
Remember, too, not only, well, that case we were endangering public, but people don't know if she has like herpes or something, right?
Well,
like,
that's
what happens if she has herpes or has
another communicable disease,
HIV or like hepatitis, and somebody gets hepatitis and they try to sue the store or sue her. Like, you could have a serious life threatening or life altering illness that you just spread to somebody because you think it's funny to do it on the internet.
Somebody raised a very interesting point on Twitter, and they said, my so-and-so has lupus. She has a compromised immune system. This could kill her.
Exactly.
And I just say, I never thought of it like that. It's so fascinating what people are willing to do for their 15 seconds of internet fame.
It's one thing if you're at your friend's house and you want to film yourself doing it to their ice cream when they're like, don't touch my ice cream. You do that, then watch your friend eat it, and then show them the video of you licking it first. That's funny because you're friends and you're in a controlled, safe environment.
And odds are if they're going to kick your ass, they'll kick your ass.
Yes, exactly. But you're not likely to – you'd have no idea. Somebody could pick that up and be crazy allergic to whatever they had on their tongue or something. Who knows?
Another video I saw this week was someone walking into a Walmart, grabbing a Listerine bottle, swishing it, then spitting it back in the bottle.
Well, you can't
that's
sell
just
it.
Gross.
You also can't sell it once the seal's broken. So
yeah,
that's just basically that's theft at that point.
Yeah. I don't know. It's this whole culture of Vine and TikTok and YouTube.
You know what
it's
it really
stupid.
Is? People did that before. We had pranksters and doing crazy stuff or falling through stores, and it's dumb like when we were in high school and that, but now the difference is literally people, I don't know, it's not like a younger generation thing or it's just that they're ignorant, but they don't realize any ramifications because they've never really gotten in trouble before, but they see people doing this online, so they're like, I'm gonna do something funny too. And it's like, really stop and think, is it worth it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the dumbest thing dumbest thing I'll admit to, I must have been maybe 19 at the time, maybe a little older. I was walking through Walmart. I grabbed a loaf of bread and cranked my friend in the back of the head with it. And while screaming, bread of loaf! And I had people stare at me, and that was it. I mean, the loaf of bread didn't explode. It just had a head-shaped dent in it. And that was the most I've ever done. Or I hit someone with like a bunch of pool noodles. In the store.
My dad and I, and like most of my family, can't stand cilantro because, you know, it's a genetic thing. Either you like the taste or you don't. Mm-hmm. So we'd go grocery shopping, and occasionally I would grab a sprig of cilantro and be like, hey, dad, and he'd turn around, and I'd wipe it across his face and then, you know, throw it on the ground. So it was like 10 cents worth of cilantro, and just watching him gag and almost barf in the middle of the store was really funny. I'm trying to think. The only thing, when I was younger, my dad did one time, there was a dented can, like, you know, from the from one of whatever it was like maybe corn or something in an indented can. And I was sitting there one day and walking through with him, and he just tosses it over the top of the row to the next aisle. And I went, oh my God, we're going to get in so much trouble. And he goes, what trouble? What happened? And we just continue to walk. So it's like little things like that. People do pranks like that, but that ultimately, unless you hit somebody on the head with it, doesn't harm anybody. And that was like 20 years ago. Like, you don't do things that could harm somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to do. Yeah. Like, just use common sense. And it's surprisingly how many people just don't get that today. I mean, in the immortal words of some other wise motherfucker, don't be a fucking idiot.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's what happened around the world this week in the weird and wacky. We actually don't have a Satan's Pantry recorded pretty much for the rest of the summer, and I'll tell you why, folks. As you may know, I'm a fat bastard, and it's time to do something about that. So for the next little while, we're going to be taking a brief hiatus from Satan's Pantry as I prepare for weight loss surgery. That'll be happening probably later on this year. Alex, you're also going for a revision as well.
That is correct. I've had a sleeve done, and I'll be going for a bypass, depending on what they say.
So we have to kind of watch what we're eating with our diets and everything. And we do have more cookbooks from Inside Editions, and hopefully we'll get to those before the surgery date and gets cut off. But it's also the summer. It's hot as hell to be cooking inside right now. So and please bear with us.
Next time I'm at the Birdcage, I'll take a look and maybe take some pictures of some of the recipes. Maybe I'll produce something here. Because it doesn't mean that we can't have do the recipes. It just means you can't have a lot. So it could be like, I know we had, what was it, one of the books is pizzas and stuff in it, right?
Yeah, there's pizzas. So that's the Ninja Turtles cookbook.
So all we have to do is try to make, instead of making four pizzas, you make one pizza with four sections of the different recipes, and we give that a try. So there's ways around doing it, but right now we don't have anything immediate.
Yeah, so don't worry. Satan's Pantry will return before the end of the summer. We just have to get some things figured out logistically. So don't worry, folks. I'm sure you'll hear us gag at some point again. Indeed. However, one thing I can recommend for Satan's Pantry, if you happen to be out and about and you live in the United States of America, and I'm sure many of you do, you should be checking out the Dr. Pepper that's featured for Spider-Man Far From Home, the Dark Berry. My God, is that good.
It's really sweet, so you might want to put a bunch of ice cubes to dilute it if you're not big fan of sweet things, but it's pretty tasty.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And also, to go along with another micro Satan's Pantry, if you go to Coca-Cola.com or CokeStore.com, one or the other, you can buy a kit from Stranger Things Season 3. And this past weekend, we had a chance to try the new Coke, which is the 1985 formulation of the seminal classic. And someone mentioned this on the Terrible Warriors Discord, saying it tastes really close to Pepsi, and they're not wrong. It's less, it's more sweet and less syrupy.
Well, like as far as the timeline goes, from what I remember, is you had Coca-Cola that was made with cane sugar forever, and then in 85 they went, let's go cheap, and they went with a new formula that had the high fructose corn syrup in it. People hated it because it tasted like Pepsi, so then they went, okay, well, we'll get rid of that and bring Coke Classic out. Well, Coke Classic didn't go back to doing cane sugar. They just changed the formula so that it tasted closer to it. Mm-hmm. And then eventually Coke Classic, they just dropped the label Classic from it and just became Coke. But it's the same formula that they brought back in the early 90s. So what they did here is with this new Coke, it's still not the original Coke recipe. It's the 80s recipe that is still with high fructose corn syrup. If you want the original Coca-Cola recipe, you have to buy Mexican Coke. And I don't mean the white stuff. I mean the bottle. if you get a bottle that's made in Mexico, they still make it the exact same way that down there that they always did up here until the 80s.
So there we go.
Little trivia.
Little something for you. So we have got another review from Alex, and then when we come back, we'll wrap up the show, and we'll talk about what's coming up on the show next week. So we'll be back, guys, right after this, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
I have a pair of releases here from VVS Films on Blu-ray, The Beach Bum and Escape Plan 3, The Extractors. Now, I won't go into too much detail with Beach Bum because that was a theatrical release that either you know by now if you've liked it or not, and if you wanted to check it out, you probably already have a general idea of what it is. So I'll just talk briefly about the quality of the release. It comes to us with some special features. VVS is usually pretty good at providing a few behind-the-scenes or trailers, that sort of deal. And it has a pretty good transfer as well. It's going to... it's not going to, you know, turn any heads and be like your reference series Blu-ray, but it is really good looking, and the surround track sounds pretty fantastic. I personally enjoyed the film, so I know it got middling reviews initially when in theaters, and it sort of did, you know, very, very little at the box office. I think it's going to do quite better on video, and this is, if you're, you know, on the fence about it, it's definitely worth checking out. Now, on to the larger title here, in my mind, is the third Escape Plan film in the Stallone series. Now, this, I had seen the first one in theaters, obviously, being a big fan of Arnold and Stallone. And the second one, I didn't get a chance to see it in theaters because it had a limited run up here. But I did get to see it on video. And I thought it was a bit of a step down from the first. It looked a little cheaper, lower budget. But then I found this third film to be a lot better than the second one. Like, it's got a different director, and it's, you know, it's direct to video instead of limited theatrical release, but you got Batista's back. And so is Stallone, obviously, 50 Cent, and they've added some extra characters here. Devon Sawa plays the son of former partner, and it sort of ties it back into the first film here. And it's a pretty good premise. Enjoyable. I like a lot of these direct-to-video movies where they put a little more effort into them, make them a little more fun, and I hope they do a lot more of these in the future. I know it had a theatrical release in some parts of Europe and Asia, and I would have liked to have seen it in theaters here, but I am pretty happy with the Blu-ray release. Good quality, video audio-wise. There's no artifacts on the disc or any issues with the transfer. Looks great, and it's going to be probably one of the staples of you know, the action movies I go to, especially when it's like raining or anything out. So, both these movies you can get on Amazon, Canada, the retailing, yeah, $25-ish or so, depending on the Blu-ray or not, if it's on sale. And they're worth it if you're fans. Out of the two, I would probably go with Escape Plan personally, but of course there's plenty of people and plenty of fans of the different actors in the Beach Bum that you might want to check out as well. So between the two, I personally like Escape Plan more, and I can't wait to see what VVS has up their sleeve next for us.
And that's the kind of show it has been here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. Hopefully you will stay tuned to us all throughout the week. As you've noticed over the last few weeks, we've actually launched the Twig Classic stream, which kind of brings back older interviews, podcasts, and other topics that we've done over the course of the last 12 to 13 years. We've been doing the show with a various variety of co-hosts. So think of it as like finding something at the back of the freezer that, hey, I didn't know that was back there. That's probably still good.
And this week, we've got one actually scheduled to come out the day after this show. I basically spun a wheel and went, let's pick this one. And I picked one which was Geek Urban Legends that you guys recorded in, I think it was 2008.
Oh, wow. So that's going a ways back. So as always, hopefully you'll enjoy the classic stuff. And maybe we'll kind of revisit some of these topics perhaps later on in the year, because I know way back in the day doing the Twig shows was a lot of research, a lot of pre-production with me and Alex essentially running the show for the summer as Mr. Tristan is taking a extended hiatus from the show. We do wish him the best, and hopefully he comes back well rested when he's ready to come back. We will be talking about more interesting topics moving into the fall, because we have some prototypes, as we talked about off the top of this show. Digital ownership and cloud gaming services should be something we should definitely talk about around the Stadia launch. We did promise a fighting game show, which just didn't happen just due to the complications that happened in my personal life, but we'll probably touch upon that later on this month, just to fill up a little bit of content for you guys. Plus, whenever I can get Alex over here during the summer months, we're going to try and record some commentaries for you guys for you guys, which you can watch either via YouTube or Tubi. Basically, it'll be movies that are freely available or available on some streaming platform that you can watch at your convenience. And we'll give you our commentary, stupidity, and jokes along with it. Hopefully you'll have a chance to enjoy those. And trying to think of what else we got coming up.
Maybe you're going to have a boxed roll or something?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to talk about for that. I mean, I do have a lot of D&D books I got to talk about over the next couple of weeks. I got Ghosts of Salt Marsh. I've got Acquisitions, Inc. And they just sent me the Essentials Kit for D&D. So I have three D&D books I got to read through.
Artelsorian as well, I think, right?
Yeah, that comes out in August after Gen Con, the Cyberpunk Red book.
Did we already do, was it Mechton they sent? And
I haven't reviewed Falkenstein or Mechton yet. Yeah, so ones,
so that, you know, that might be, you know, instead of putting him on the main show, that those would be good short, quick botched roll episodes, right? Because you can dedicate it just to like 15, 20 minutes talking about that, 10, 15, whatever it is.
Yeah, or maybe I'll do them as shorter reviews here on the show. Basically, either way, you'll get something.
Absolutely.
So, until next time, we have been
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. And as always, be cool, be kind, be careful. We'll talk to you guys again next week, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.